From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. An Estero man was arrested last week on 3 counts of unauthorized access of a computer system for an alleged hacking into the Lee County and Florida Division of Elections websites. The incident has raised concerns about the security of voter information. We'll explore the growing push toward electronic balloting, the potential for electronic voter fraud and other election tampering, and Florida's aging voting machines. Plus, this year, the state legislature allocated the largest amount of money for affordable housing programs in a decade. We take a closer look at how those programs work as we explore opportunities and challenges in increasing affordable housing in Southwest Florida. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. In this year's state legislative session, lawmakers allocated the largest amount of money for affordable housing initiatives in a decade. Later this hour, we take a closer look at Florida's affordable housing programs. But first, we turn our attention to technology and security when it comes to voting. Last week, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement arrested Estero resident David Levin on 3 counts of unauthorized access of a computer system. Levin is accused of hacking both the Lee County and State Division of Elections websites. He, along with Dan Sinclair, who is running against incumbent Lee County Supervisor of Elections Sharon Harrington, posted a video detailing how Levin allegedly accessed the website. The Florida Department of State said in a statement that the state's voter registration system was not accessed and that it's secure. Even so, the incident raises concerns about the security of voter information. In the past 6 months, data on hundreds of millions of voters in the U.S., Mexico, Turkey, and the Philippines has been found online in unprotected form. Some of those records have been discovered by security researchers, but others are found by hackers. With the growing push toward electronic balloting, today we explored the potential risks of electronic voter fraud and other election tampering by hackers. We'll also take a look at concerns over Florida's aging voting machines that are largely in use today as we look toward the future of voting in the U.S. Joining me now is Dr. Joseph Canary. He's the CEO and chief scientist for the election technology company Free and Fair, which offers its systems as open source. Canary grew up in the Fort Myers area and is now a leading expert on and advocate for secure, transparent, and low-cost elections. Good to speak with you again, Joe.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And we're also joined by Pamela Smith. She's the president of the nonpartisan nonprofit organization Verified Voting, which works to ensure the accuracy, transparency, and verifiability of elections in the U.S. and safeguarding elections in the digital age. Pamela Smith, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hey, thanks so much for doing the program.
And we're speaking with Ion Sancho. He's been Leon County Supervisor of Elections in Tallahassee since 1989 and is one of Florida's most outspoken election officials, with particular interest studying voting technologies. Sancho was appointed by the Florida Supreme Court as the technical expert overseeing the recount effort following the 2000 presidential election debacle. Ion Sancho, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, John.
I invite listeners to join the conversation as well. Connect with our guests by calling 877-GCU-TALK. That's 1-877-428-8255. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And first of all, Joe, just tell us a bit about the work and mission of Free and Fair.
Free and Fair is a new public benefit corporation founded here in Portland, Oregon. That's my good morning. It is a concretization of the work I've been doing as a public official myself for many years. I was a professor in many countries working on matters relating to elections, and it seemed to be time to turn that into something concrete and productive here in the USA. And so Free and Fair essentially is a company that focuses on delivering to the public what we call high-assurance election systems that are open source. So we're mimicking the model that we see in the rest of the world for other kinds of adjacent technologies like Linux, which is also open source.
How is offering voting technology as open source different from, I guess, the typical arrangement between voting officials and suppliers of voting technology? And why is that so unprecedented?
All existing deployed election systems, to my knowledge, in the world are not open source. They are all closed and proprietary systems. That's the existing business model that has lasted for the last 20-odd years. The reason for that is mainly historical. Those business models and proprietary closed technology was the norm back in the late 70s, 80s, and 90s. And as we move into the modern era, more and more IT systems, especially those that need to be secure, have moved to open source solutions because of the benefits provided by such, independent of any fiscal issue. The fact that one can analyze the system, the code, its other artifacts that describe how it works, helps experts in the state of the art ensure that the system is fit for purpose and secure. All modern deployed high security systems, the kinds of systems that I work on with other hats on here in Portland, for the federal government, for the likes of the Department of Defense and Homeland Security, are open source systems today.
All right. And you've written that Travis County, Texas, Los Angeles County, and San Francisco are all taking steps toward open source election technology. Do you predict that that will eventually become the norm?
I wouldn't want to cast predictions, but we've seen that sort of phase transition happen in other verticals where there's a transition in technology to an entirely new way of thinking, and it's not uncommon that we move from closed solutions to open solutions. I think that Travis County, Los Angeles, and San Francisco are leading lights in this regards, and the rest of the nation is looking to them for both leadership as well as to happily permit them to be the guinea pigs in this regard.
And Pamela Smith, tell us generally about the work and mission of verified voting.
Sure, thank you. So we promote the use of reliable, accessible, and verifiable elections technology. We do that through education and outreach and testimony and so on. The organization, I think it's important to know, is founded by technologists. And the idea is to provide insight and key information when decisions are being made about how technology should be deployed in elections. The way we see it, every voter should be able to check on a physical ballot that her vote captured as she intended. And every election official can then use those records of voter intent to show that the votes were counted correctly. And that leads to stronger voter confidence in, you know, the viability of our elections. So we keep track of what kinds of voting systems are being used around the nation. We have a free resource, a map that's at our website that shows that information right down to the local level. And it tells you how the different types of voting systems work. So that's kind of the core of our efforts.
And through your work, do you often find yourself in D.C. testifying before congressional committees on voting issues?
We do, not only in D.C., but also in the state. It's important to know that our voting systems around the country, there's no sort of centralization of that at a federal level. Usually decisions about what kind of voting technology to buy and use are made at the local level. So sometimes at the state level, but because of that, you know, we find ourselves doing a lot of this work in the states as well. And one of the things we're seeing is that the voting systems around the country are getting old. So they're aging out. There was a recent report that came out from the Brennan Center that used some of our data about voting systems. Mm-hmm. And they said 31 states said they wanted to get new equipment to replace some of their old systems. And in the near future, in the next couple of years. But 22 out of those 31 states said, we have no idea where we're going to find the funds to do that. And that's a really big risk to elections.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and delve into that issue then right now as far as the aging voting machines. In most Florida counties anyway, they bought new voting machines after the dimpled Chad debacle in the 2000 presidential election. But those machines are now almost 16 years old. Ion Sancho, I know the situation's a little different in Leon County. You kind of got the jump on that, didn't you?
Well, as someone who's had many years of experience in the elections field in Florida, we knew when our cycle of life expectancy was going to be over on our devices. So we started planning really a decade ago, putting money aside so that we could, in fact, replace our aging voting system. And that we did prior to the 2014 general election. So Leon County is a little bit different, but again, Leon County is the state of Florida is very decentralized, so every county really has to make its own plans, its own adjustments relative to the purchase of equipment. And if you're an urban county, the state of Florida will likely not pay much toward that endeavor. The state will pay rural counties for voting systems and cover their costs, but the state will not pay for urban counties' total costs for election systems based upon the fact that they believe they're richer counties, so the richer counties have to pay their own costs. And so that really has led to a checkerboard pattern across the state of Florida with different models even of the same technology being used. And so it's quite a difficult task of ensuring that the entire state has an excellent voting system.
Right. And, you know, the optical scan machines that we see throughout much of Florida, from what I understand, typically problems start to occur with these machines after about 10 years. It's been 16 now. Pamela, what kind of concerns do you have? What goes wrong with these machines?
Well, there's a variety of things that can happen. One of the things that I will affirm that sometimes with older systems, you can't get replacement parts. You can't get some of the pieces, the consumables, the memory cards, and other devices that need to go in those voting systems. And, you know, there's only so much you can find on eBay after a certain point in time. Some of this technology, when it was bought even a decade or 12 years or 15 years ago, was old already. So that's one risk. Florida's doing this a little bit differently. As Ion said, some of the more well-off counties will have to find their own funding. In other states, some of the more well-off counties may be easily able to find that funding, but the ones with fewer resources might not be able to. And then voters would have a harder time voting in those counties if the equipment breaks down. We've actually seen some places reduce the number of polling places because that was all the number of polling places they could afford to open and with the equipment. And that means long lines. So you can also have long lines if the equipment breaks down.
Right. You know, NPR recently reported, and this relates to what you were just talking about, Pamela, you know, one Florida county ordered replacement parts from eBay because the manufacturer simply, you know, stopped making them and they weren't supporting those machines. Is that a frequent problem?
It gets to be a frequent problem, and it's one of the reasons why Joe is doing what he's doing. You know, you really, a lot of the new designs that we're seeing from places like LA County and elsewhere are looking at how can we use pieces and consumable parts that are replaceable more easily. You know, maybe something that's a commercial off-the-shelf piece that will fit into the overall voting system. Now, there are some challenges that go along with that, but the frustration that some elections officials feel at having a no longer supported voting system that they're trying to hold together with duct tape and baling wire to keep it going, it's very real. And so looking at how can we design voting systems better, you know, how can we invest in that infrastructure of democracy in a smarter way as we move forward?
Amid the current presidential election season, we're exploring voting technology and concerns over security. We're speaking with Joseph Kanairi of Free and Fair, Pamela Smith with Verified Voting, and Leon County Supervisor of Elections Ion Sancho. Call 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255 to join the conversation. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Send email to GulfCoastLive@WGCU.org or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And let's take a call now from Dan in Fort Myers. Hi, Dan. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks.
Did you have a comment or question to share with us?
Yeah, is this John?
Yes.
Oh, hey, yeah. Yeah, it's Dan Sinclair. So, yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about the proprietary equipment and moving away from that and the HABA money, trying, you know, that it's all gone, trying to replace some of this equipment, and then also, you know, some potential auditing options for tying into the current scanners. So you've got some really good topics on there, and I think we can expand upon them.
Sure. And we should note Dan Sinclair is running against current Lee County Supervisor of Elections, Sharon Harrington. And he was actually in the video that I had mentioned earlier in our introduction with David Levin, who had allegedly hacked the websites of the Lee County Supervisor of Elections office and the State Division of Elections website. And, you know, I wanted to ask Joe, when you hear about instances like this, does it surprise you? Are these kinds of hacks more prevalent than people think or easier to do than people might think?
The manner in which this particular situation rolled out is a little unusual. It certainly got the attention of the election verification community. The kind of lightweight security analysis that went on in this situation is not uncommon. In fact, it's quite often the case that anyone who starts to learn the beginning of online security pokes around in resources that they're curious about just to see what they can find. But the bigger problem of these kinds of breaches of election systems is part and parcel of what we see with breaches in other government systems worldwide. You already mentioned in the lead of the show the fact that we've seen disclosure of now hundreds of millions of voter records across the world, and I expect we're going to see similar sorts of situations continue to grow here in the USA. In part, that's because elections data, especially here in the USA, isn't viewed as particularly critical data in the current law or practice. It's also partly due to the fact that most elections administrators don't have IT staffs that are, deeply familiar with modern security practices because it isn't part of their job mandate historically. And lastly, we have a consolidation of existing vendors that are responsible for this data, and they seem to have shown repeatedly to be incapable of defending against these kinds of even lightweight attacks. So I expect we'll continue to see these sorts of problems moving forward.
Okay. Do you think that, you know, amid a push toward electronic balloting, that, you know, we could be looking to face even greater increased risks when it comes to protecting the integrity of voting systems from malicious hacks?
If there is, any election is a hotly contested, interesting social situation. Those kinds of social situations where you have finance and power at play often lead to funny business. One part of modern funny business is cybersecurity threats. So it is going to be unsurprising to me if we don't continue to have these sorts of problems pop up in elections here in America and elsewhere, as we've seen historically. And in particularly hotly contested elections where there's lots of money slushing around in the system, it leads to a circumstance where there's even more bad actors offering up their services for potential malfeasance. I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to scare anybody here, but we do have a creaking infrastructure that Pam and I already summarized, and a lot of it was designed and built 15 years ago and is running on software systems that don't even see security patches for many, many years. And this holds true for both the equipment that the voters see as well as equipment in the back offices of these elections officials. And unfortunately, that just leads to a problematic state of affairs, especially when it comes to cybersecurity.
So it sounds like you're saying, you
know, I'm glad you brought this up.
Oh, go ahead, Dan.
I'm glad you brought this up because, you know, there's a lot of key things here that have been discussed, and this is a great topic and great conversation. And I'm really glad that everyone you brought to the table is, you know, is here and talking about it. You know, one of my concerns is people think that when we move to paper ballots, you know, because the state of Florida restricted right in their language what the supervisors can and can't do. And it's right in the law now that you have to have a paper ballot. And one of the concerns is that people think because we're using paper ballots that somehow those systems are secure, and they're not. One of the issues that I have is when you go to print out a results tab from the scanning machine, which in our case, you know, we use the ESS 200s, and when you use those machines, you can print out a results tab in the future, but if someone's gotten in there and messed around with it, then you're going to get whatever, you know, whatever's been affected by that. What I would like to see is be able to work with the vendor and provide a real-time printer that prints on a continuous feed sheet with a watermark in the background, where every time someone votes, it prints out a sequential log ID number that is unique to that vote, a barcode, and how that person voted. Not their name or anything. It's still secret ballot, but how that person voted, and a line item for each one, and that gets sealed into a box. And then when you go to run a recount, instead of having to recount every ballot, you can just run that continuous feed sheet through a scanner, and you can recount in seconds instead of in days. But my main concern is that way you have a watermarked piece of paper that can't be ripped or torn or broken, and you have proof that everyone's vote was counted and how it was counted. And one of my concerns with the with these proprietary machines is that, you know, when you're paying $3,200 or $3,300 for a machine that is basically just a screen and a printer, and that's all it does, and you have to replace parts, it gets very expensive. One of the other things that happens with these machines is the screens get out of calibration after a while. And if you don't calibrate them, you have a situation like you had in Arizona, and I believe they had in Texas as well, where you go to push, you know, you will go to vote for one person, you end up voting for someone else because the screen calibration is off. My thinking is if we have, we can use whatever proprietary software the vendors want to use, but we put it on standard equipment where I can run down to Best Buy and go get a new touchscreen for $100 or less and replace it if there's a problem. I don't have to spend $3,300 to replace a piece of equipment. And my thinking is if we can standardize on standard equipment instead of proprietary equipment, it makes it a lot easier to upgrade, replace. It's much less expensive for the supervisors of elections to buy this kind of equipment. There's just so many little things we can do. And I love hearing Joe talking about open source. And I think that's a fantastic way to go if you have the IT support staff to protect it. You just have to make sure that you've got the security to be able to use something like that. And when you started talking about internet voting, the other interesting thing is the only certification that I have found in the whole world for internet voting is here in the United States, even though we really don't use internet voting. So it's actually the U.S. Air Force that certifies all that equipment. I was on the phone with a supervisor of elections up in Canada a few weeks ago, and they use internet voting and telephone voting up there. And all the certifications are all done by the U.S. Air Force because it was really the U.S. military that created that system. So there's a lot of interesting options out there.
Yeah, it seems like internet voting would certainly do a lot to, you know, increase voter participation. But, I mean, what do you think, Joe? Is it a good idea at all? I mean, just based on security.
Yeah, I'm sure Pam may have something to inject here, too.
Sure,
if
yes.
I might reflect upon Dan's suggestions. Firstly, his suggestion of how to augment the equipment with a paper roll is one that's been made in the past, and it has a root of a good idea, but it has some significant problems with regards to voter privacy. The counterpoint proposal from elections experts, which is being rolled out in America, that gives you the same sort of guarantees, is something called a risk-limiting audit. It's been concretized in law in California and Colorado so far, and it's a means by which to audit the election after the fact, independent of the means by which you vote. So long as you have a paper audit trail and a digital audit trail, it lets you sort of compare and contrast the two in a cheap and statistically well-founded fashion. So that's the thing that folks like myself and Pam suggest moving forward, that we see concretized in law, for example, in Florida. When it comes to matters of internet voting, I have been examining and commenting on and hacking internet voting systems now for almost 15 years for several governments around the world. We see them continually rolled out with great fanfare and cost, and they continue to disappear with a quiet whimper when they're found to be insecure. There's an enormous amount of interest in the topic, and there's some firmly held beliefs that it may increase voter participation or increase the speed and accuracy of our count and the like, but unfortunately the current literature doesn't show those things to hold true, and moreover, experts in the field still think there's quite a long road to hoe before we're going to have a internet voting system that any of us could trust, even for the most simple of elections. Last year, a report was written for the U.S. Vote Foundation. I was a co-author of that report on this topic, and I encourage your readers to look up the executive summary. It's called The Future of Voting, and it's found online, and it lays out a case for where we need to head with regards to internet voting in America and abroad, and is supported by a broad range of experts across the community.
Pamela?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, here's the thing. We've had a movement in the country towards more verifiable, more auditable voting systems so that voters can have legitimate confidence in the outcome of the election, because a voting official, such as Ion, can demonstrate that they're working correctly. When you go the other direction, whether it's in polling place voting systems that can't be audited, or whether it's attaching a system like that to a worldwide attack surface like the internet, it undermines voter confidence in election outcomes. And even though it seems like internet voting should somehow improve participation, so far there's no real evidence for that, and there's some evidence to the contrary. In Canada, the national elections body, Elections Canada, decided not to recommend the use of internet voting, and there have been a number of different studies in different provinces that have said, yeah, this is not a great idea. What is happening is that some towns are using internet voting on an experimental basis. But as Joe said, around the world, it's been introduced in places and then abandoned. The federal government spent probably a decade and a half and over $100 million research dollars trying to put together an internet voting system pilot for military voters, and eventually abandoned the project. And the reason is because it hasn't been possible to come up with a set of standards that would enable us to do this securely. I think that you can secure certain parts of it, but there are other big holes in the boat that are going to cause it to sink. And so it's got very different properties from polling place voting, and because of that, it's something that we're not ready for yet. The Department of Defense doesn't recommend it. The Department of Homeland Security representative recently came out against it, said this is not something that's ready for governmental elections. It's not ready for prime time. So we're a ways off. And although paper ballots seem like an old technology, it's a technology that actually works for this purpose pretty darn well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted...
John, if I could jump in just for a second, you know, one thing that Pam said and about the voting, I'm not necessarily in favor of internet voting, but it is a subject that, you know, that of this discussion. But one thing that I found from doing the research on the municipalities, there are three different systems in Canada. One is the federal system; they have their own elections. The provinces have their own set of elections, and then the municipalities have their own set of elections, and they all are operate on different levels, and they're completely different on how they do it. The municipalities that have been running the internet voting have been finding that more than 85% of the people between 18 and 40 have been using the internet voting. So it definitely has had a dramatically positive impact on voting. And then a portion of them use the telephone voting, a much smaller portion, and then, of course, other people use traditional voting, but it's been such a high percentage that have used the internet voting for the places that have allowed it to happen that it definitely has had a dramatically positive impact on turnout. So it's just an interesting little point.
This is Ian Sancho, and yes. I'd like to just jump in here and say that from what I've seen around the world in internet voting, that's the last place we need to go at this time. As a practitioner, one of the things that it's very clear to me, the internet was designed to be a completely open system. And now we're saying we want to do something that requires one of the highest levels of security we can provide. Placing that security on the internet is not, in my opinion, doable at this point. And what we it seems that we're looking in the wrong direction. For certainty, if you want to prove to citizens that their vote actually counts, then in my opinion, you must provide evidence to the citizens that their vote was counted as the way they intended to. The optical scan system right now is the only voting system that has evidence. The evidence is that ballot marked by the voter in his or own handwriting. And you may use electronics, as we do around the country, to speed the counting process up, but at the end of the election, if you have a proper chain of custody, you have evidence. That evidence, I believe, is critical to ensuring that we can say to the citizens that your votes have counted. In Leon County, and we have purchased an independent mechanized audit system. We actually have a separate tabulation system that our county purchased, so that we can actually compare and contrast the different totals and confirm that when we report to the citizens that these numbers are right, we actually can check it. And we do check it, and five counties in the state of Florida have purchased up separate auditing equipment. Because Florida, the audits that we provide here are statistically invalid. When you hear people say, as I heard in one discussion, recounts in Florida, there are no recounts in Florida, particularly of a manual variety. We only, in a recount situation, in a manual recount situation, if we get that way in, after the November 8th general election, we will only look at a tiny portion of the ballots, and that's our recount. And the audit that the Florida requires every state official that's an election official to do post-election, that audit comes after the certification process. So even if the audit discerns that the county's machines counted the votes wrong, guess what? There's nothing legally that anyone can do about it. So I think first and foremost in Florida, we need scientifically valid audits that can confirm that the marks on those pieces of papers are correct and were tabulated correctly. That we do not have. And I think we need audits and verifiable voting systems before we even begin to talk about internet voting.
Well, I want to switch gears a little bit here. You know, in recent years, we've seen increasing concern from politicians, mostly on the right, over the issue of voter fraud or voter impersonation, and proposals, or and some of them have passed, laws requiring voters to show ID at the polls. Joe Canary, you've actually said that states that have enacted such voter ID laws actually increase the likelihood of fraud. How so?
Voter fraud is can be actuated in the USA by manipulating voter rolls in a variety of ways. Historically, that meant doing things like manually submitting changes to a voter's address or name or the like and going through the sort of paper rigmarole of trying to cause trouble, adding deceased voters to the roll or fictitious voters, etc. This is a concern we've held for many, many years, though, of course, in practice, in the vast majority of jurisdictions in America, we see next to zero voter fraud of that kind, based upon the evidence. The problem with moving to a digital realm with regards to voter registration and systems like, and in states like that have voter ID laws, and in states that participate in what's known as ERIC, which is a interstate digital relationship with regards to voter registration, is that you see a consolidation of voter records in a single clearinghouse. That in and of itself is not a problem. Online voter registration, we all agree, is a great idea, and automated voter registration is a great idea. In fact, it's somewhat strange that America has voter registration in the first place, given that almost everywhere else in the Western world doesn't have such a thing. But if you have the consolidation of data that is sensitive to the election in a single place held by a single vendor, and again, historically, we haven't seen these vendors or offices have deep security expertise, now you're putting all your eggs in one basket. And that could lead to all kinds of not just voter list manipulation or fraud, but it can be automated rather than manual as in the past, because these systems are frequently online or nearly online. And therefore, a breach like we saw in Lee County would be able to be pivoted into these kinds of systems, and that's usually a very straightforward proposition.
I would like to add that something similar to that actually was one of the features that destroyed the validity of the 2000 election. The state of Florida released improper or inaccurate rolls, which improperly identified tens of thousands of individuals, people who had been regular voters their entire life, as felons. When these individuals went to the polls to vote in the 2000 election, they were told, "We're sorry, you're a felon. You're not allowed to vote today." And if that individual objected, "Wait a minute, I've been voting. I've been coming here voting all my life," they were threatened with arrest. Florida has no appeal procedure. If you were identified at that time as an ineligible voter, you were ordered to leave the polling place or be subject to arrest. That happened because of these databases that were inaccurate, that actually many election officials, unfortunately, in Florida took at face value. So an incorrect data list, as Joe's talking about, changing something like the party affiliation or an address could actually make a citizen not be eligible to vote, even though they've been a voter. So these lists have to be accurate if they're going to be meaningful.
All right. Well, we are about out of time for this portion of the program. But Ion Sancho, one last question for you. We recently learned that after 7 terms as Leon County Supervisor of Elections, that you'll be retiring after your current term. What do you plan to do next? Will we, you know, to continue to see you as a voice in the, you know, election world?
Well, yes, we need to ensure that we can verify the election results of voting equipment. Trust is great. I like Ronald Reagan's slogan, trust but verify.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great place to leave it. Thanks so much to my guests for joining us today. Ion Sancho is the Leon County Supervisor of Elections in Tallahassee. Joseph Canary is CEO and Chief Scientist of Free and Fair. And Pamela Smith is President of the nonprofit Verified Voting. Great to speak with all of you today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
We're taking a short break, but when we return, we explore challenges and opportunities in Southwest Florida when it comes to increasing affordable housing options. This year, the state legislature allocated the highest level of funding for affordable housing initiatives in a decade. We'll take a closer look at the programs that use that funding. That conversation's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU NPR for Southwest Florida.